Uncle Mike had a horse and buggy for a long time. And I suppose in my memory, really, about the time he no longer had the horse and buggy was the time that Aunt Molly quit coming to church very much. They had several blocks to walk, and it would have been, as old as she was getting, probably hard for her to walk. And when she did come to love feasts and special meetings, perhaps someone was kind enough to pick them up. And that may have been the only reason. I don't know. But,
excuse me.
I was just going to say that all I know is that my parents never seemed to question the fact that she had a good reason for not coming to church.
What did you know about Granddad's second wife? Is she a local girl here?
Oh, she was a local woman. She was a Philbrin. She was the daughter of the man who had the annual meeting at his place.
Is that right?
In 1874. She was one of his daughters, and she bought that home place where the annual meeting was. And she lived there the rest of her life. But her husband was Bowman, a man by the name of Abram Bowman. He was from Virginia, and he was in the Civil War, and he was mustered out at St. Louis with three other fellows, all from Floyd County, Virginia, and that's the southmost corner of Virginia where my husband came from. And he said, I'm not going to walk all the way back to Floyd County. I know some people up here in Illinois, and I'm going up there. So he came up here.
Well, is he related to that Bowman gang around Rockingham County, Virginia?
He's related to the Bowmans down at Topeka Church in Floyd County, close to Roanoke. He's related to the Bowmans around Roanoke. And whether they are related to the ones in Rockingham County, I don't know. But, you see, your grandfather, Flora, that I'm calling Uncle Mike, had a sister, Sarah Bowman, who was Sarah Harshbarger Bowman. She was a sister to my grandfather, Joseph Harshbarger.
Well,
the plot deepens.
Yes. And I confess I haven't done my homework at all on that part of the family, so I guess.
So I'll stay with the part of the family that you want.
Well, you just you go ask ahead. This is real intriguing.
And, what's your next question?
Well, I was, would you develop a little further about the granddad's second wife? What sort of a woman was she?
She was a very heavy-set Dutch woman, remarkably fine in business. She bought her father's 160-acre farm and paid for it. She had four daughters. One of them became my sister-in-law after we were all married. And she milked cows. She always had to hire a man to do the work, a young man, because her husband was unfortunate enough in their young years to become overheated in the harvest field, and it caused him to have insanity spells. This is what the doctor of that day said caused it. And there were times when she had to take him to the insane hospital at Jacksonville. And so everything was up to her. And there were times when she would have him at home. He would be pretty good, and they would be happy. And they were happy days when they could do that. She had built a new house. And the old house was moved back into the chicken yard, and she fixed a room for her husband up there for his unfortunate periods. And when she could handle him, she had this room barred so she could put him in that room and keep him at home in the summertime if he had a spell. But she never had the pleasure of actually having but just her early years with a companion. And she was a highly respected woman. She had, as I said, paid for her farm. every man that she hired as a hired man to run her farm, she'd say, now, one of the things you have to promise to do is to take such and such a daughter anywhere she wants to go. And she married off three of her four daughters in that way. And two of them were from Virginia, from Floyd County. One of them was my brother-in-law, and they were older than I and my husband. And another was another Virginia man from the Topeka Church in Floyd County. But she was a highly respected woman. She was raised in this Filburn family, and the old Joe Filburn, who bought that land and who had this annual meeting at the barn there in 1874, did not believe in educating his daughters. She could barely write her name, and her daughters taught her to read a little. And the only thing she tried to read was her Bible and the Messenger. And she did finally learn to read enough that she would get something out of this. And she had money, and she was very conservative, however, and did not approve of putting a piano in the church, and said that if we put a piano in the church, why, she would quit giving. And so her youngest daughter was my age, and her next to youngest was the one that became my sister-in-law, and of course they both wanted a piano in the church. And they finally talked her back into giving again.
Now, about what time are you talking about? When would that have been?
That would have been, we got our first piano in 1919, or 1918, one of those 2 years. And I was the first pianist, because the progressives said that if the elder's daughter, my father happened to be the elder at that time, if the elder's daughter plays the piano, maybe it won't hurt the conservatives quite as badly. So I played. And I was the first pianist.
Well, I'm backing up here a little, picking up sort of a tangent.
There's an interesting little story about your grandfather's second wife. We had another conservative lady here who had married one of the Vanneman men, and her name had been Vanneman, and she remained cape and apron bonnet to her last day. And she owned the land that where Matt and Sarah Riffey moved to while Vesta was in high school. But she and this Levina Bowman that your grandfather married for his second wife were very good friends. And she was old, and your grandfather was old. They were both old. But she told this woman who had been a Vanneman, or had married a Vanneman for her first husband, and her second husband was Buckingham. She said to Mrs. Buckingham, she said, you know, I would marry again if I could get the man I wanted. And so Mrs. Buckingham said, who do you want, Levine? And she said, I'd marry Brother Florey. So Mrs. Buckingham went to Brother Florey. She said, would you like to get married again? And he was living alone, trying to do his own cooking, and with Pearl bringing things to him, you know, and some of the grandchildren helping him once in a while. And, he said, I wouldn't mind if I could get the right person. She said, well, I know who would marry you. Well, he said, would you tell me? And she said, yes. She said, Levina Bowman would marry you. And he borrowed a horse and buggy and drove out to the farm where she still lived with my brother-in-law and her daughter that married him, and he proposed to her right away. She moved into town with him, and I guess he died in 1924, your grandfather did.
No, not that soon.
Was it 1925? He died, I thought. No, they were They were married in 1924. That's it. Because it was the year my first daughter was born. It was one or the other. Yes, he married this Mrs. Bowman that year that my daughter, the first daughter, was born, 1924. And they lived together a few years, and they were very proud of each other, very proud of each other. And she took her horse and buggy to town so they'd have a horse and buggy. And
now, did Granddad never have a car?
No. I think I'm right on that. He never had one. No, in 1924, not nearly everyone had cars here yet. We didn't get ours until 1923, our first car.
Well, at his age, he probably wouldn't have been too anxious to tackle it.
No,
anyhow.
No.
Might he have not been able to afford it? I'm putting together little some of the things that you
said. I doubt
said.
It. I doubt it very much. You see, there was no such thing as pensions, even for ministers then yet. And he gardened. He did odd jobs for people around town. If at any time he was asked to preach, he was paid for his preaching, that many sermons. It was so much a sermon, you know. And he stayed around with the children some. I know that he'd go out to Matt and Sarah's and stay with them maybe several weeks at a time. In the summer, he could help in the gardens. The children didn't let him have any wants, I'm sure of that.
Do you happen to know where they came from? As I remember, Dad was born in Indiana. And then they moved on from Indiana here, I think. I think they came out of Rockingham County sometime before that.
It was a progressive move all the way. They would leave. Now, as far as my grandfather Harshbarger was concerned, they left Rockingham County in a wagon with just what they could pick up, because the first soldiers were coming. And they were not out of sight until they saw their barn burning. And they went as far as Ohio. My father had not been born yet. And then after Gettysburg, and the armies were forced south again, and peace came to the valley, northern valley of Virginia, they went back. And then their next move was to Illinois. But as far as what your grandfather might have done, I don't know. But I do know that many of them, my grandfather Grootbaker, progressed from Franklin County and Roanoke County, Virginia, which was the southern part, you see, to Ohio first. They stopped at New Carlisle, Ohio, and were there a few years. Then they came on here. I don't suppose it was over 3 or 4 years there in Ohio, and then they came here because he arrived here in 64. I own the house that he built, and it's been remodeled and doesn't look anything like it did before, but I own 40 acres of the land that he bought at that time. And he was always an active deacon. And the Harshbargers scattered, and Charles Harshbarger that you've seen in The Messenger recently. Do you read The Messenger?
I haven't read it right recently. We've been on the road a good bit.
Yes.
We're not keeping him.
The last year, he's had one article in by himself, and then there has been one of those personal articles, sketches, you know, about Charles Harshbarger of Peoria, written by someone else. And it was in just this winter, that article was, with a picture. Well, I guess his picture was with the article that he wrote. And he's a retired truck driver.
I remember saying that.
Yes. Now, he is the great-great-grandson of the John Harshbarger that was a brother to Joseph Harshbarger. And it would have been, he'd be in your relation line.
Do you know a Luther Harshbarger? There was a Luther Harshbarger in McPherson College when I think, in more mature years. He's been back, and he's a minister, and he's been, I'm not sure. I think he's been a counselor or something in the state prison. I don't know.
I think he's not in our line. Are there any other questions you'd like to?
Say that on the air. Would you repeat that about the Brubakers?
All of the Brubakers were Mennonites in Europe. They did not meet the Church of the Brethren until they arrived in America. Then they met them at Germantown, you know, and in Lancaster County. And they began joining the Brethren, who were all called German Baptist Brethren at that time. And as they went down through Virginia, why, more, the Brubakers kept leaving the Mennonites. And I think, as far as I know, I have not studied Mennonite history, and I do not know how many Brubakers might be Mennonites anymore. But I do know that half of my Brubaker genealogy of this Henry Brubaker, born 1775, have followed through and are the German Baptist Brethren now. When the Great Division came in 1882, they were the ones we called Old Orders. And we maintained the line of the church, and then the others were progressives, you know. And they're, as far as the progressives and the main line that we now call the Church of the Brethren are concerned, they just as well be one. There's just a few of the doctrinal ministers that have any difference. The rest of us all feel like we're one.
Well, we've had enough conversations with them, but we never quite get the job done.
Oh, that's a shame. I didn't know whether you wanted to know a little bit more about Daniel Vanneman, who came.
Do please.
He was made put in the ministry and made an elder while he was here. And as you probably know, he was the first missionary secretary of the Brotherhood when we began to enter the missionary work. This was a very, very moot question. It was approached very quietly for a while, and then they had to get, just like any church of the, any problem we've ever had in the Church of the Brethren has always had to be approached. In antagonistic way. Until now, we've been very loath to change. And are we over that yet? I don't know. Do you belong to the Church of the Brethren?
Oh, yes.
Well, what is your feeling? Do you feel we're over that loathness to change?
Well, I don't know. I guess my impression is that in some respects, we're eager to change. Now, I think I see two strains within the church. I get the feeling that the leadership sometimes is almost so bent upon change we may sacrifice some other things. And I reflect back here upon your comments about the style of preaching. I think I feel an openness pretty much, certainly in the church leadership.
Well, I do
I
too.
I don't know whether this would prevail everywhere or not.
But I read in the Messenger about these groups. And this reconciliation group, no one has ever explained that to me, to my full understanding, who they are or what they stand for. And but, of course, I think that perhaps I'm one of them that have gone so far into ecumenicalism that maybe that's the reason that we're losing our numbers.
Well, I don't know. I'm sure we have differences of opinion. And sometimes at annual conferences, you know as well as I, we've had some real battles over National Council of Churches. I remember that thing being slugged out at the Manchester Conference 30 years ago. I could hardly believe it.
Well, I can hardly believe.
I don't think that represents the mainstream of the church, though.
I could hardly believe what was about to happen at one of the Louisville conferences. I was at both of the Louisville conferences. And at one of them, you know, why this Blake effort to organize the this effort to be ecumenical, and this, we were having this question, whether or not we would be delegates to the ecumenical conferences or whether we would just be listeners. And there were actually at that Louisville conference a large group. They were there in person from Pennsylvania. Just plenty of them. You could see them. They had part of the plain dress yet. And they're young men. Many of them had the beards yet. And they were just overflowing the grounds, and they were ready. If we voted as a delegate body, and I was in the delegate body that year, if we voted to join that Blake effort to organize, what was the full name there? To organize these denominations that were interested there, if we joined them and sent delegates, that Pennsylvania body was going to walk out and organize their own church.
Well, I'm afraid we have had some people, especially in Pennsylvania, there have been some pockets of people who have been so negative on ecumenicity that I don't think that's dead.
Well,
I don't know how much, I really don't know what percentage of the church population they represent. Of course, it's unfortunate if it's any group.
Yes, but from the very first, I preferred myself, as ecumenical as I am in local work, and I am not hurt at all that quite a few of my family have gone to Methodists because they married Methodists, and the Methodists were not willing to change. So my family, I guess I raised them so open-minded that they could make the change. I have one daughter who has stayed with the church here at Girard, and she married a Universalist. There's no Universalist church here anymore, and I'm sure her husband is much more Brethren than he is Universalist. And he calls it our church all the time. He works with us all the time. And he even came to our love feast for the first time last week, before Easter. But the other daughter married a Methodist. My son married a Methodist. And we lost our oldest son in World War II, and he had married a Primitive Baptist girl who for her second husband, married into the Christian church, and she has never changed her letter. But she goes to the Christian church with him because what Primitive Baptists we have around here are way out in the country. And so she's raised her family in the Christian church, and so my granddaughter there. The son we lost left one daughter that he never got to see. And so there we have only, out of our four children, only one working in the Church of the Brethren. And yet, she married the Universalist, and she has three children, and they're all in the Church of the Brethren, with the exception that one of their daughters now married a young man from the Christian church. They live about over here by Litchfield, about 25 miles from us. It was too far for her to come back to Girard. And they had one of the conservative Christian branches. Had a little country church right where their whole community, it's a community church. And it's just 5 minutes ride from them. And so she did change her letter. Because she said, I'll have to raise my children over here, and they should grow up with the church and the community, and this is the way I feel about it. And her mother felt the same way. And they have a son in the Air Corps, and he's a career man, and he goes to church. It doesn't make any difference where he is or what's going on. He goes to church every Sunday. And he picked the Baptists quite often when he was in the South. You know, he's been stationed in the South a great deal. He was in Vietnam. He had to take part. He was in the Safety and Rescue and Search Squad. You see the feeling, the belief coming through? He wasn't in the Army, neither was my son, because he wanted to or believed in war. But we can't go into that now. We have no time for that. But this grandson of mine loves the airplanes. That's his first love. He hasn't even married. And yet all the work he has done, he has managed to direct his action and influence the uppers to have him where he's working in something that is good. He's not destroying, but he is helping. And he was shot down himself when he was trying to rescue 8 men who had been shot down in a helicopter. And he was saved. It happened quicker than you can tell. But if he couldn't find anything else, he would go to a Catholic service. He would go to the Army chaplain services if that's where he had to go. But wherever he's been, he's always gone to church. And he keeps his letter here at the Brandon Church here and helps them once in a while with a contribution. But I am ecumenical, but I did change my... I did say from the very first that I did not believe that we wanted the organization from the top that was bound to take over there under Blake and... What was the other man's name? Blake and somebody. I forget the other.
I'm not sure that I wasn't at those conferences.
Well, I followed the movement.
Well, that was Bill Thompson's predecessor.
And we had at Louisville there 2 or 3 young men that were, they were so, and they are leaders yet, and I can't call their names right now. They thought we must be represented there so we could have a vote and guide. Well, his ideas were right, but I knew we'd never guide those Methodists away from that bishop business at the top. And I'm not willing to give up the congregational choice.
Well, I think I'm ecumenical. I feel very ecumenical in terms of anything that's substantive. If this presupposes that I must be organizationally ecumenical, I don't know that I would fight this from a belief standpoint. I just don't think practically it would benefit us that much.
And I don't
because
either.
Because it seems to me that one of the great virtues that I see in the brethren is that we're small enough that we know each other.
Mm-hmm.
We have a real asset there. I don't think it's any better or worse than the Methodists or Catholics or anything else, but it doesn't hurt. We don't all have to be blended into a big blue-gray something, it seems to me. I have no objection to smaller groups working.
I think it's better myself. I think we're different flowers in God's garden. And yet I believe that we should have communion together, anyone that wants it.
You know, we just last fall, World Communion Sunday, we had a group of Catholic sisters from Salina, Kansas. They work in a sister institution, come down and join us in the love feast in the McPherson Church, and they washed feet and everything else. Now, we've learned to know these people in some summer tours. I direct some summer tours, but
Yes. This
kind of thing could never have happened when I was a kid. They couldn't even come into the church without being thrown out.
No
Catholic could, much less the sisters.
I believe in the Protestant groups all should have free exchange of letters.
Well, I think we do in the church that we work in.
We have here at Girard, but your Southern Baptists don't.
No,
they won't
that's
allow
right.
it at all. They won't even allow trine immersion. If you've had, our preachers, our evangelists used to say, if you get your trine immersion, why you'll be accepted in any Protestant church. But it's not true, because one of our Weddle boys here married a Southern Baptist girl, and he had to be rebaptized.
Incidentally, we didn't touch much on the Weddle background. Are you related to the Weddles in Kansas, Bloom, Kansas?
Yes, sir. I've never met them, and I don't know what kind of people they are.
If we had been attentive, we could have brought you a tape from a Mrs. Weddle whom we visited in Garden City a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was a young man by the name of Leroy Weddle.
He's pastor of the Hutchinson Church.
He was over here at Peoria 2 years, and I was sick those 2 years. I was ill, and I did not get to go to the district meeting and meet him. And he told our pastor, who inquired, he said, are you related to the Virginia Weddles that, and some of them are at Girard? And he said, oh, I don't think so. And he said... He told where he was from, and his grandfather was from Bloom, Kansas. And see, he's a very young man. He's 3 generations down from the ones. But my husband's first cousin, George Weddle, settled at Bloom, Kansas.
Oh, well, that gets you pretty close.
And George Weddle, who settled at Bloom, Kansas, was a minister. And he came from Floyd County.
How long ago would that have been?
Oh, years ago. They built a soddy and lived in a soddy.
We talked to this elderly woman. Her sons have been instrumental in keeping that church going, and it's her grandson who is this Leroy Weddle that you're talking about.
Well, I was just sure he had to be, because, and then my husband also had the first cousin who went to Calgary, Canada, and now his name escapes me, but he sent his son, Oral Weddle, down to Laverne College. And some of the friends that I had made in Laverne and my relatives that live at Laverne learned to know him. But he returned north to Northern California and possibly is in that northwestern district, I don't know. But I have lost track of him. But his father has died now, and his father was a fine preacher. But he was my husband's first cousin also. And my husband was from a large family. They lived on the top of the Blue Ridge. My husband was named for his mother's people. His mother was French. And their French name was Lemoyne. But it's pronounced Lemon in English. So they use surnames for their children, you know, so much there in Virginia. And so his given name was Lemon. Just before this break, I was saying that my husband's given name was Lemon because he had been named for his mother's people in France. And there was a large family. The Weddles themselves were German to begin with and had come through England and into northern Virginia and even some in Pennsylvania. But they became brethren quite early in their arrival in America. And in that part of Floyd County up on the top of the Blue Ridge Mountain, it's the only county in the state of Virginia that has no railroad through it to this day. But they were quite isolated. And my husband was born just 2 miles from the Skyline Drive or the Blue Ridge Parkway that is so famous now. And whenever we visited back there, which was very frequently after the children were grown, we went every 2 years. We always would be at one of his sisters that lived up there close, and he'd say, "Let's go up to Rocky Knob while Ellen does the milking." Well, we've been up there a lot of times. And Topeka is the strongest church, I think, in the district of Southern Virginia. It's a large country church near the county seat of Floyd, and that is Floyd, Virginia. The county seat and the county are both Floyd. And there were several ministers among Lemon's uncles. And he had an uncle named Andrew Weddle. And Uncle Andrew was a powerful preacher, mountain preacher. He preached the mountain style. They preached just as fast as they can talk. And no notes or anything. And when we took our family there, they sat there with their eyes bugged out and their mouths open because they had never heard a preacher preach like we heard out of the Burke's Fork Country Church, which was just a little church where my husband went when he was a boy. And that man preached with the ahs between every word or two, you know. He preached so fast. But he was an old-fashioned preacher. They couldn't afford a pastor, you see. And he's just a man that gives his free time to some of the little churches that are up there in the mountains to this day.
Are those churches pretty conservative now?
No, they're not conservative at all. They are very progressive. And those people were very take Weddle family were all the first ones to take a hold of the agricultural work when the extension services were and the farm bureaus were organized. The Weddles were in every one of them. They were a very progressive family. Every one of the girls had taught school. There was a family of 13 that were raised to adulthood. And this was my husband's family. And girls had taught school, which didn't mean a whole lot. 5 months of school, if you'd finished the eighth grade, you could teach. Now, Virginia is one of the first states to organize county high schools, you know. And that was one of the most marvelous things that happened. As soon as everyone had automobiles and they began to get the bus idea for busing children to school, this county built a county high school. And now all Lennon's relatives are being well educated. But he himself went to a 5-month school up in the mountains, taught by mostly people who only had 8 grades themselves. But he wanted to be a farmer, and his older brother had already come out here and married, as I told you. And 3 other brothers had come out, and some of them went back. But the Topeka church was built by 3 generations of that Weddle family that my husband came from have built the Topeka church. One of his great uncles built the very first church at Topeka, which was a little brick church. Then it became too small, and so the next generation had an uncle of his that built the larger wooden church. And then after the county was open up to the automobile and everyone was going out and getting jobs in the industries around, and it's a prosperous county now, not because everyone is behind the mountain is making liquor and having avoiding the revenue officers, but because they have work now. And one of Lemon's nephews overseen the building of the present beautiful brick church at Topeka. It's a lovely big brick church, and they have a very thriving congregation there. But we nearly always, when we go to visit, we go attend there one Sunday, and then the other Sunday we go out way up on the mountain to 10 miles up from the Topeka church on up, and go to the Little Burke's Fork Church because they still hold services there once a month. This uncle Andrew Weddle said he had to preach fast because if he thought so fast that if he didn't talk fast, he'd forget what he was going to say. Now, I remember what I forgot a while ago. His son was Joe Weddle, who went to Calgary, Canada, and he helped establish those churches of the Brethren at Calgary and around up in there, and was the district leader up there until his death. He did not live to be a real old man. And then one of his uncles had this, I'm not quite sure without getting out the book where George Weddle came in, but he was in this line, and he went to Kansas.
Now, I just looked up here. The Mrs. Weddle that we talked to was Mrs. C.C. Weddle.
Mm-hmm. We have not kept in touch with
the... I remember she talked about coming from England, and she talked about some of them in the one that went to Calgary.
Yes, yes.
She told us mm-hmm. about that.
Well, this George Weddle came back to Virginia and visited his relatives when my husband was a grown young man.
Well, that would have made him a generation before this.
Yes, he was a generation before. He was the same generation as my father-in-law. But he was in that direct line. Mm-hmm. And we are direct relatives of them.
Uh-huh. Pretty obvious.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
There can't be very many Weddle families around Bloom, Kansas.
Well, there's a lot of Weddles over in Indiana, and we've never been quite able to. They're not in our line quite. It goes back farther, nearer to the Revolutionary War, and there we'd have to find the dividing point.
Yeah.
And to find where the Weddles come from that are in out there northeast of Indianapolis. You pick up an Indianapolis telephone book and there's a column and a half of Weddles. Our son lives in Indianapolis, and he married a Methodist girl, and so she could not change, although she was a graduate of Manchester College and she had attended Love Feast, but she could not see feet washing, could not possibly see feet washing. So my son said, Mother, he said, I can go and kneel on the Methodist cushions and just get so much out of the communion. And I said, I don't object to your going at all. I want you to be together in the same church.
We changed directions real fast here. I think of something that occurred, but we let go by. Did you know Joel Vansel? Do you know who he is?
Yes, I know Joel Vansel. I knew his sister.
That's the Omar woman.
Mary Omar.
Yes, Mary Vansel, I knew her well. I met her at the Des Moines Conference. Her daughter had her there, and she came over to one of the Champaign, Illinois meetings.
Her daughter, Bernadine. We talked to Bernadine a week ago last Sunday.
Well, yeah, she's in Topeka, Kansas.
Yes.
And her, the Joel Vansel's daughter lives in McPherson. She's Mrs. Homer Brunk, and we've mm-hmm. known her a long while.
Someone came through here 2 years ago and wanted to know where the Vansel home was when they lived in Girard. Their father was Tom Vansel.
And that's Joel's father. Joel and the Omar woman, this is their father.
Yes,
Tom Vansel.
Joel and Mary's father mm-hmm. was Tom Vansel. And I didn't know at all. And I couldn't find anyone else that remembered the family excepting a Mrs. Stutzman. And her husband is dead, or if he'd have been here, well, he could have found the place, I'm sure. But she wasn't raised here. She was raised over in Cerro Gordo. So she didn't know. And so I could not help these people at all. There are people constantly stopping here that I meet, and I'm so happy to meet them. It's so interesting.
Well, now, Joel was in this community when you were old enough yet to know him before he left.
I was a little girl when he left. They were young people when they moved to Kansas. They had a horse and buggy and drove out to Pleasant Hill.
Well, we knew Joel, when we were first married, we had the pastor in the Ottawa, Kansas church, and Joel Vansel lived there. And he always used to say, your granddad was the best preacher around. All of the young people like to hear your granddad.
That confirms my story, that your grandfather was a favorite preacher around here. And I modestly say that I believe my father was next. He had many of your father's your grandfather's qualities, so the loud speaking voice. And after his timidity and entering the ministry and wondering why his brother-in-law, Nicholas Brubaker, wasn't elected with all of his good education, my father said, well, Nicholas, I don't know what to do. He said, I have to accept that the Lord has called me. Now, that was a call from the Lord when the church called. The people were very dedicated in those days, and that is something we have lost.
I feel the same way.
We have had so much talent go through our colleges, young men that could debate and could speak in public and were highly educated and greatly qualified to be ministers, and they would not because it didn't pay enough. Where was their dedication?
Well, I sometimes think the church hasn't laid its hands on some people, and I feel we have become so structured now that the church doesn't do that in the same way it did. And I think many of these people protested, and maybe some of our generation, if the church would express that kind of confidence in them, would respond. I don't know, but I sometimes wonder.
I believe you're right. The church called when I was a little girl. Then the time came when they decided that young men should express their own desire, their own feeling of a call. And the money called louder than the church did. While the dedication of when my father was brought in, and for quite a few years after that, even when I can remember, if the church called, that was a call, and they answered it. There was one young man, we had two here that were called later. This Gibson that we were talking about had a grandson by the name of Elmer Gibson that was the best Sunday school teacher we ever had here. He was superintendent of the Sunday school for 25 years, and he always held a half hour introduction to the Sunday school before the classes took their places, and he taught us the Bible from one end to the other chronologically. And so we all that were under him know the Bible. Well, he was called to preach. And so was a young man by the name of G. Otis Stutzman. And G. Otis Stutzman was a farm boy, and he was on the farm. He did not have a high school education, but Mr. Gibson had been a teacher before he went into the bank as a cashier. So that was his position later in life. And the farm boy accepted the call, but Mr. Gibson said, under the present plan of the non-paid ministry of the Church of the Brethren, I cannot preach and support my family. Therefore, I will take my wife and I will deny the call and we'll go back to our seats. But the farm boy accepted and he became a very, very good minister. He lived sacrificially and got his education and went through Bethany Seminary as it was required, as it was organized then. It wasn't on the high level that it is right now, but he became a very successful minister and well-known around Laverne, where he finally died. And that was an example of what things that happen when they begin to change over from denying the call.
Well, we thank you so very, very much.